Hello, my name's Kate Rolls and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust as you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's artwork One Another. The date today is the 26th of September 2009 and the time is 2:25 a.m. If I can please ask you to say your full name, your age and where you come from.
Hello Kate, my name's Gavin Cross, I'm 38. I currently live in Liverpool, I actually come from London. But that's where I come from today anyway.
And how are you today?
I'm all right. Yeah, a little bit of plinth anxiety, but I'm all right.
What are you anxious about, do you think?
Oh, it's just, heights, choice, the wonderful randomness of what it's all about, reception, posterity. Who knows?
What was it about this project that you wanted to be a part of?
I thought about this a lot because it's on a good number of levels. One, we're big fans of Anthony's work, Anthony Gormley. I can know him. We know him through his art. We live on Merseyside, so we've got another place. The installation on Crosby Beach, which is fantastic. Whenever people come and visit us, we always take them there. Very affected by that piece of work and the field and the Angels of the North and the whole concept. So, you know, that kind of triumphalist, minimalist, egotistical, in-your-face nature of it all is quite exciting. That drew me to it. I'm on the Artichoke mailing list as well. And again, in Liverpool, we had the Capital of Culture last year, so we had La Machine visit us, La Princesa, which was, my background is, I have a background in performance and theatre, but that was, you know, just one of the most engaging performances, events, pieces of art that I was involved with. I got dispensation from Kathy, my wife, to just throw myself into it for the weekend. She was a spider widow for the weekend, and my friend Wendy, her husband was about, and we just spent the weekend just following the La Princesa. And in fact, a week later, our son was born, Ned, and but he still gets referred to by our friends Wendy and Robin as Spider. The Artichoke, and I suppose I was aware it was coming, I'm aware of the fourth plinth and bits and pieces like that, and it was just very exciting. And when the opportunity came through, it was a very instinctual thing. I said, yeah, I'll sign up for that. And then, you know, and then you get to the moment and here you are.
Yeah. And when you found out that you had got a place,
yeah.
What happened then?
Well, it was very exciting because it was the third round of the monthly rounds, and I got the email saying I hadn't been selected. It was like, oh, fair enough, because I didn't think I would be. And I'd got into it, I'd been watching it and following it. And then I got the email a couple of days later, and plainly, for some reason I can't understand, 3 a.m. on a Friday night, Saturday morning, somebody obviously pulled out. Couldn't imagine why. So I got thrown, I was thrown this bone, and I said, yeah, that would be a good... Well, I phoned Kathy and said, look, I've been offered it, which was just like, wow, this is the time slot, oh. Let's go for it. Should we go for it? Yes. And so we've gone for it.
And once you'd gone for it, how did you then decide how you were going to spend your hour?
Well, my final decision of how I'm going to spend my hour was my first thought. However, there was a journey of that. There were several options. And having watched, when I signed up for it and how it was portrayed, this snapshot of life in Britain today, there was seemingly beautiful simplicity about it, which was, you know, an introspective hour, just be who you are. Then the good old British public then get involved and incite this wonderful randomness of this expectation to do something, to be something. And, you know, and I think even if it didn't have that incitement, I probably would still have made that choice. But, you know, I think from then on, the pressure was on, really. And so So kind of like rabbit in the headlights, is like, well, do I need to do anything? And I have a background in performance. So there were options and opportunities there, but I have just fallen back. And I also consulted with friends through a layout. We had a night with some friends and they came round and we ate and we drank and we talked through ideas and we picked the idea and then we did some focused thinking around it and then abandoned all that and just like keep it relatively simple, maybe not. So it was engaging and people were excited. People were genuinely excited. I'm excited. But when people when you know, you kind of drop it in and people are like, oh, and so I've had a bit of support from friends and through sort of the ubiquitous Facebook and Twitter and embrace that side of it. But people will you know, have made connections with it as well with this little hour.
And so, how did you decide in the end to spend your hour?
The hour I'm going to describe the hour, I'm going to spend the time talking about my son Tom Cross. Tom died just over 3 years ago, and he had very complex disabilities. And we had 6 years of life with Tom, a glorious life of challenge for Tom, and for us as a family, but a glorious and wonderful time as well. And you know, Tom really impacted on who I am today. And for me, it was about marking a moment. I knew straight away the opportunity for this to become an archive. Now, I'm going to use a word that I don't like, but I didn't get my thesaurus out. The notion of the marking the moment, of memorialising, I don't like that word. I can't think of a better word. At 2:30 in the morning, anyway. You know, Tom is gone. We don't have a headstone. Tom's ashes we spread as a family in the River Wye, but Tom informs the work that I do, and you know, somebody once said that you're only forgotten when someone stops talking about you. And you know what? You know that everything is fleeting, isn't it? So I may be talking about Tom for an hour, but those wonderful statues on Crosby Beach are already rusting. Now they'll be around for a good long time, but they'll be gone in a blink of an eye, as will this hour, as will the other three plinths, King George and the other two, whoever they are. So I mean, my son has the right to be on that plinth as well. And so just gonna spend some time, reflective time, storytelling time, celebrating time as well.
And can I ask you about the things that you've brought with you today to take
Yeah.
the plinth?
Well, I've got a bean bag, two purposes. One, it's gonna root me for a bit. You know, I'm a big fella, I'm 6 foot tall, I'm 6 foot wide, my center of gravity is low, it's a long drop. But also that was Tom's beanbag, his mobility was very impaired. So he spent a lot of time there, he was very comfortable there. So I brought that with me. I've got a big box that's painted, full of objects and books and lots of pictures. And then we've got, and it's all very homespun, and that's fine as well for us. We've got a tree, which I'm going to clip some things on. It's going to be like this aid memoir for me as I clip things on and to see where it takes me in the time. Got some balloons. On the day of Tom's, we had a celebration for Tom. 350 friends in beautiful Sefton Park. We had a celebration event on the day of his funeral. And we did release 100 yellow balloons, and lots of people still talk about that. And so I brought 20 with me, and I might let some go. It's all right, they are biodegradable, as I said. But it's just that a series of moments for me. I'm going to either engage with anybody who wants to hear or myself and just talk.
How are you feeling about doing this?
I'm really, really excited and mixed emotions, and which I always knew it would be. I mean, my job is I am a consultant services for children with disabilities. I use my parental experience, and also I've worked for service development as well, and I brought the two together. I bring the two together. So I actually, as part of my job, have talked about Tom today, and this as well. So when, and that has an emotional there's an emotional resonance to that. But as I say, it's about telling stories for the purpose of sharing and learning, hopefully. You know, and Tom taught me it lots, and I think Tom has lots of lessons for lots of people, still people who deliver and design services for children with disabilities. They've got a lot to learn from what Tom achieved in his short time. So I feel, you know, I feel emotionally charged, but that's okay. You know, I've got some tissues in my pocket, and that's okay. But yeah, I do want to spend the time smiling. That's what I want to do. And I might take some time out as well.
Would you like to say a bit about what Tom was like?
Yeah, Tom was fantastic. Tom was a very cheeky, funny boy. Very much a very engaging young man who would pull people into his world. And his world was fantastic. It was physically very tough for him. He was ventilated, so he was mechanically ventilated 24 hours a day. He needed round the clock awake care in our house and in our life. But we worked very hard to try and have an ordinary life as we could. And he brought that because that was his world. He knew no different. And he had just an amazing charm about him that really engaged me, all of us. And you know, the gift of the time, when the price is high because the time was short, but the gift of the time we had just sustains me. And so his smile, now I see the echoes of that. I have two other children, Libby, Kathy and I have Libby, who's 4, and Ned, who's 1 year old. And you know, so I see Tom in them, which is a wonderful and sad thing. So, and he's very much part of our life in a living way, in a celebratory way. You know, part of, you know, it's not something that, you know, and so this is a very, very visible public thing, and you know, it's a balance, but enough people met Tom, and a lot of people who didn't meet Tom have fallen in love with Tom, and the pictures that we have, and the archive that we have, and the video that we have, and the stories that still echo because of that time. So, you know, there's a lot of people who met Tom, and I want them to know about him, because that's a good thing. And they're not going to meet him, and they never had that chance. But just a little flavour of him, I think, does you good.
Can I ask what Tom's disability was?
Yes, sure. It was a very rare neurological condition. In fact, we had 3 years where we didn't have a diagnosis. It's called SMARD1, SMARD1, spinal muscular atrophy with respiratory distress. And at the time, it was extraordinarily rare. Still very rare now, but it's now identifiable. And there's a sadness about that, because we didn't know what Tom had. We didn't know what was going to happen. So at the time of things collapsing, and he stopped being able to breathe for himself at 6 months, we just happened to catch it. And lots of children don't get caught. So 2 o'clock in the afternoon, one Saturday, we took him to the hospital because we were worried. At 2 a.m, he was ventilated. Now, that could have happened overnight. It could have happened in a different period, and we would never have known, and Tom wouldn't have woken up, and no one would have been the wiser, but he was caught. So he was ventilated, we didn't know what's happening. Now this is a identifiable genetic condition. All of our children, there's a 1 in 4 chance it will happen again. If Kathy and I have more children, I mean, 1 in 4 is less than Russian roulette. Well, that's 1 in 6. There's many, many families who have genetic conditions. They have that situation they're in, and we know that, actually, because people do know that the prognosis, which is a horrible word, that the life expectancy is life. It's a very life-limiting condition for children. That the choice to ventilate is probably not going to be offered. So, you know, there might not be many children with SMARD1, but being a genetic condition, there's a great opportunity for that to be addressed. To be, you know, that may be. There are researchers working on it now, and this genetic condition may be able to be treatable. But, you know, we were in a time frame where the technology was there to support him for the time that he had.
Yeah.
and you know, it was hard work for him, so the time was always going to be short, and it wasn't the condition that caused Tom to die. It was just his body and the tiredness and infection, and so, and then the time came, and that was his time, that was his energy spent, and that was always going to happen. There are children with this condition. We've kind of stepped away from it, really. The work that I do is about services. I don't work with families and children, I find that difficult. But I do work with managers and designers and commissioners, and I use our story to inform those decisions. And so, you know, Tom is still having a positive impact.
And was it your experience that pushed you in this direction career-wise?
Yeah, I was a drama teacher. You know, my Kathy was a theatre designer, and that was the path we were on. And then you get taken out of life, and you live for 15 months in a hospital. We lived in Alderhay. It was I've owned homes for less time. And then you change your life, and then you are hand to mouth, and then for a while you just have to make money and somehow, is there some ridiculous percentage, like 92% of families who have a child with a disability will experience some financial hardship. You know, 65% or something, definitely 60-something percent will experience poverty because of the fact that, you know, I don't mean to be political, it's a very personal situation, because you just are lost and bereft, and you work with huge amounts of people. We're 28 practitioners working with us at one point. That's a huge tax burden. And we could have done without half of them and a quarter of their money, and we would have had a wonderful life. But it's that systemic challenge that families face. You know, they face hardship, grief, pain, emotional draining, financial drain, challenge with services, attitude, barriers, and you know, expected to do it in a very particular way. You know, you're made to feel like sometimes you're a burden on society. My son cost the taxpayer £170,000 a year, and a couple of people reminded us of that. You know, you get to, you know, that life has a tag, and you know, these decisions are sometimes made around finances. We couldn't work out what it was spent on, but he cost a lot of money, and for some families, you are made to feel like their child is a burden.
And so today, who are you doing this for?
Me. The artist is an egotist. I celebrate Mr. Gormley's egotism in his casting of himself and placing that out there in a raw form. And, you know, as I say, my background is performance. Now, it concerns me and it worries me. And reflectively, I'm not sure I'm happy with that. But I know the impetus was, one, to be part of the project, two, to use that with Tom and I. But the first impetus was definitely the public art nature of it, the demonstrative part of it. So this is about me. Now I have to temper that a bit because my wife is here and my friends are here, and it is about Tom as well. But I'm wondering, it's very, you know, I embrace that.
And can I ask about your background in performance?
Yeah.
You said what performance work have you done?
My background has always been community drama, community practice. I've been very fortunate to maintain that. So, you know, from starting the new theatre, but working community. So being a freelancer now, I'd like this year, I had the great privilege of working for the Liverpool Everyman, and I directed a community play on the Everyman stage, in one of my favourite theatres, and it was 26 community performers between 14 and 84 who'd never, none of them had performed at that level, and I'd never worked at that level, and we took a play from nothing to performance. And so it's that community practice, it's using the arts and theatre to give people that opportunity just to make the mark. And that maintains, you know, my background, as I say, well, I'm a teacher, so that's all about performance, really. But some stand-up work, some acting work, community and education-based theatre. But that was never, you know, that's always been a part of facet. It's never been my career because there's no money in it. There's only a few people who make a good living out of the arts these days. but you know, so that went with my education experience. And when I moved into becoming a primary care trust project manager for services for children with disabilities and now a freelancer, I still keep that side of me going. So I got had great fun for the Capital of Culture in Liverpool. I was a host of a monthly cabaret, Potting Shed Cabaret, where we had established cabaret performance artists and up and coming local artists come together once a month to create something mad on a boat.
And are you still kind of in the future, do you want to carry on with your performance work?
I think it'll always be there, definitely. And I've got some aspirations around, and I met an aspiration. I moved to Liverpool 20 years ago and I went to the Everyman and I saw a production there and I said to myself, I actually want to work here one day. It took me 20 years, but I did it. And you know what? There's a real catharsis to doing that this year. And it gave me the focus to be able to say, for the next couple of years, I'm going to focus on this other side of me, this developing services to children with disabilities. That's my focus. And you know, in this particularly, this is 2009. It's a very challenging year for people. I have a great privilege to be able to choose, and I've chosen that side for a couple of years. And who knows? I can always get the hat out and dance on a corner with a monkey one day.
Can I ask you about where you're from? To talk a bit about your upbringing.
Sure. I was born in southeast London in Kidbrook, which is in Greenwich, which is about 7 miles. East of us here, southeast London, which is a very intriguing part of London. You know, we just spent time with friends in Muswell Hill, driving through North London. To me, as a southeast London boy, and I'm reasonably cosmopolitan, but that's wow. Southeast London is a very strange place. It was for, as a child, so that I had a great upbringing. Very typical council estate boy. Who found youth theatre and decided that, you know what, those kids from the big school up the top of the high street, they've got it easy. This drama lark's a laugh. And got in, you know, and got dragged into that and loved that from that age. And took myself off to the Northwest to do a degree in theatre and decided that that's where I wanted. I always knew I wanted to teach. Where I was, which was in Chester, there was a very strong community and educational theatre commitment there, and so that, I mean, it was about, that's why I stayed in the Northwest. And say 20 years ago, I went to college up there, and it's a fantastic place to live, and lived in Liverpool since 2000 when Tom was taken to Alderhay. We lived there, but. So my kids are Scouse. I'm never going to be Scouse, but I'd like to be, but I don't think I'm allowed to be. But my kids are Scousers, and I love living in Liverpool. And I've been talking about it just driving through London today. I could never see myself back here. Yeah, quite happy where we are.
And who have you got with you today?
Well, Kathy Cross is with me, my wife, and found out today my father-in-law is here, my brother and sister-in-law is here. Some good friends are coming, some people I hardly know are coming, which is wonderful. And they're just coming along just to be part of it. They know it's an event. They know they're coming along to support me, but they also know it's coming along to support the actual event. And I think, you know, there is something about 3 o'clock in the morning on a Friday, Saturday morning, which some people are saying, you know what, I wouldn't normally do this, but I'm not going to get another chance, so they're coming out. I don't know, actually. I've got messages from people. I've got had loads of messages from people today who say they're going to log on and watch live, which is a bit scary. But that's lovely. Just a little bit of support that way is lovely.
What's important to you in your life at the moment? What's happening?
My family, my children, my wife. Family is everything. I enjoy my work, but... So we were here to have a nice grown-up weekend, but we're actually driving straight back to Liverpool. My daughter has suspected flu du jour, potentially suspected swine flu, a very zeitgeisty thing to have. But as a four-year-old, she's very poorly. She's with granny and granddad. She's fine today. So my family are on my mind, and that's what keeps me going. And, you know, that's what it's about, isn't it?
How would you describe yourself as a person?
Well, what did I put on the website? Broad and tenacious. No, I don't know. I am confident, arrogant, rude, annoying, strident, and I'm happy with all of them. I'm all right, I think. I get away with it most days.
And have you got any hopes or fears or expectations about your hour today?
Obviously, I don't. You know, the fear that I will be exposing Tom to something that is inappropriate. I have no worries about the audience or, you know, the hecklers or whatever it is. That's their right, but just that fear that my performance ego will take over and I will use the story inappropriately. Now, I hope not, because I love my son, but that's part of it. But I'm quite happy to use some moments of stillness and quietness if I need to. You know, I don't have the greatest sense of balance. I have a very low center of gravity. So, you know, and those nets, they look very robust, but I'm a big guy. So they might slow my fall. So I do have a concern over heights, but you know, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to get up on that plinth. Have you been on it?
No, I haven't. What do you think about this project?
I think it's great. I love it. I love its audacity. I think it's hilarious. I love the way it's evolved. I don't know if Mr. Gormley likes it that way, but I don't think he'd mind, would he? I think it's a very, I don't know, right to say this, it feels very British. It's wonderfully complex and simple, and at the same time, it's this beautiful simple idea that's suddenly grown into this. I mean, look at this bureaucracy we've got around here. I filled in more forms today to get on that plinth than I needed to get a mortgage. That's a very British thing. You know, there's great concern. I'm going to run a risk. I'm actually wanting to sneak a pair of scissors on. We'll see if I get away with it. It's a dangerous weapon that I've signed a piece of paper that says.
And are there any closing words that you would like to say before you go on and stand on the fourth plinth?
No, I'm fine. I've said loads.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.